The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder why you never see God answering prayer. Well, God does answer prayer. As a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you in just a few minutes about an answer to prayer that he gave me recently. I hope you're having a good summer. Isn't it hard to believe that the summer is almost half over already? We're a quarter into August. Unbelievable. Next week, speaking of summer, film critic Mark Boubian will return to review some of the summer movies. Not a great crop this year. Maybe Mark will feel differently. I have seen a surprisingly few amount of films, though, although I did see The Stoning of Soraya M., and I'm telling you, everybody, absolutely everybody needs to see this movie. Conservatives, liberals, feminists, everyone must see this true story about the treatment of Muslim women in Muslim countries. It's an intense movie. It's probably not the kind of thing you'd want to see twice, probably not the kind of thing you want to eat popcorn during, but you want to see it. Everybody should see it at least once. I almost didn't get a chance to see that or anything, however, because I was called to jury duty. And this wasn't the first time. The first three times, and it's been spread out over the years, the first three times they called me to jury duty, I always managed to weasel out of it. Not that jury duty wouldn't be interesting. Don't get me wrong. I think I would enjoy the process. I think I would find it fascinating. My reason for excusing myself always had to do with time considerations alone. But my fourth call to jury duty arrived this June. And I figured, what the heck, I'm going to try it this time. And I thought, well, true, they might not take me. After all, I'm both a minister and a talk radio show host with an opinion about everything. Undoubtedly, I would never survive the interview process, but why not be more willing and flexible? So I prayed. I said, God, I will go down to the court and put this matter in your hands. If it's your will that I do jury duty, have them select me. I told all my friends that I was at peace with the whole thing. I said, hey, this is one of those rare times when I think I'm going to be happy either way. If I don't have to do jury duty, fine, because it would have been time-consuming. On the other hand, if they pick me, I might consider it a stimulating experience. I got to tell you, stimulating is not the word I would use to describe this experience. First, I sit in this room with about 100 other people waiting for the orientation to begin. Eventually, we were treated with a video about civic responsibility, laced with interviews by Americans who were proud to have done their patriotic duty. In fact, so proud of themselves and what they'd accomplished, you'd think they'd solved the cure for cancer. Not only that, but some of them had made lifetime friends by serving on a jury. Then after this video, we get about a half hour break for breakfast. I had an omelet from the cafeteria. Not bad. Breakfast would be one of the perks, should I be called to serve. When we returned to the jury lounge, they eventually called the names of the first panel to be interviewed. I was not on the list. Several hours went by, interrupted by an additional 15-minute break in which I bought myself an ice cream sandwich. A Neapolitan ice cream sandwich. And if I sound excited about that, that's because this was the only exciting part of the day. Then they called the second panel. I was not on the list this time either. Oh, I tried reading some magazines. I tried watching one of the TVs that were on, but there was no denying a fast-growing emotional truth. I was bored out of my gourd. Then, around noon, they read off another list of names. This time, I was on it. Our instructions? We were to take a 90-minute lunch break and return at 1:30 to be interviewed. I had lunch at Wendy's, returned home for a while, then drove back to the courthouse. Afternoon parking was more difficult. There was nothing open in the garage, so I parked on the street. We then waited another 30 minutes, and they explained that the trial was delayed. It finally occurred to me. that even if I was picked for jury duty, I would be going through this every single day, waiting around for the judge to roll in when he darn well felt like it or experiencing some other obstacle to punctuality. So I prayed, God, I changed my mind. I thought I could be happy either way, but now I just want out. Please do not put me on a jury. Well, at 2:30, the intercom came on again. It was explained that one of the witnesses never showed up. They were going to scrap today's trial and begin again tomorrow with an all-new jury. We were excused and would not be obligated to jury duty for another year, if at all. I kid you not, the announcement which excused me came within 5 minutes. 5 minutes of my prayer. Oh, praise be to God in the heavens, for he hears the prayer of his desperate servant and answers from on high. So ends Bob's adventures with jury duty. I'll still say it was a great omelet. Not a bad ice cream sandwich either. As for Wendy's, I can still go there anytime I want. So all's well that ends well. But man, oh man, oh man, there's one whole day of my life I'll never have back again. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Our theme, Christianity and its relationship to politics and pop culture. Politics really on everybody's mind lately. Hard to avoid it. Lately, Democratic senators and congressmen have been interrupted and shouted down at town hall meetings by people who are waking up and attempting to avert the great train wreck ahead, a government with its tentacles in almost every corner of the private sector. Most specifically, this monster health care bill is being brought up alongside questions about why our trusted leaders are voting for a bill they have not even read. The response is a series of accusations from the likes of Barbara Boxer, suggesting that such crowd anger is manufactured by Republican sharks and does not truly represent the real American people. The polls would indicate otherwise, Barbara dear. A USA Gallup poll shows 50% of Americans oppose the president's health care plan, while 44% approve. As for the rallies, Democrats as well as Republicans are voicing their opposition. And just in case somebody feels like making this a race issue, African Americans and Latinos, along with whites, are demanding that our government pay more attention to what the people truly want. But that doesn't click with the Democratic talking points. A recent Democrat-sponsored ad reduces the entire phenomenon to a mob brought about by the extreme right. Extreme right, incidentally, is anyone who objects to big government, wants our borders protected, or believes children should have both a father and a mother. As people move farther and farther to the left, those in the middle appear to be extreme right. And so our Washington elite, instead of representing the people, are marginalizing the people. You are no longer allowed to raise your voice without being called a mob. Now look, I want to be fair. I don't believe in shouting people down. I hate it, absolutely hate it when that happens to conservatives on college campuses. We need to be consistent. We owe the same respect to Democratic politicians. On the other hand, our in-house royalty never expressed much concern about unruly mobs before, did they? They certainly didn't mind the intimidation of the Black Panthers at last year's election polls. Neither did they speak about the right to be heard when a student tried to throw a pie in Ann Coulter's face. Maybe they were not bothered before because they couldn't imagine ever being the recipients. Besides, their term right-wing mob is not reserved only for the rude. It's used even of people who are not interrupting and not shouting, people who are merely expressing themselves through tea parties that they organize or a raised hand when they're listening to a senator speak. It seems our current government needs a basic civics 101 class. When people feel they are underrepresented, they call their congressmen or challenge them in person at public meetings. What you call a mob, we used to call democracy. Incidentally, this radio talk show host is a Democrat. But I assure you, our president is not going to let this healthcare thing go easily. You see, President Obama loves us Americans, and he is so sad, so very sad when we are led astray. That's why he's doing us a special favor. He's really cutting you a break. He's asking you to report on any of your friends who have heard disinformation about his health care plan. Yeah, this is true. You just forward such emails to our administration, and perhaps the misled pilgrim can be straightened out. This will also help our government to keep all dissenting opinion on file. Now, I want you to know that contrary to what it may sound like, this is not a rat line. You hear me? It's not a rat line. How do we know it's not a rat line? Because Obama doesn't call it a rat line. That's how we know. So please do not confuse this latest call to unity for the tactics of communist countries, dictators, or other totalitarian regimes. Oh, sure, it may resemble those countries in every conceivable way, but still, if you label it as such, that will make you guilty of hate speech. May I ask you again, how do you like the change so far? There is one thing about Obama that never changes, his ability to explain how he isn't really doing what you think he's doing. When asked if he wants to bring us to a one-payer health insurance system, he's very good at saying no, even though he means yes. That's right. It's time for another episode of Dancing to the Questions and Answers with Barack Obama.
Question me and answer bright and clear. I will answer with a question clear and bright. Even though your answer may be wrong, my question will be right. Question me and answer. Answer with a question.
1492.
What's the year that Babe Ruth hit his 60th home run?
Wellington at Waterloo.
Who became the hero at the Battle of Bull Run? Learning can be lots of fun. Question me and answer bright and clear. I will answer with a question.
On last week's program, I challenged Obama's promise that private health care would remain an option even after his new health care bill passes. Now, I'm not going to get into that again. Suffice it to say for now, I demonstrated the impossibility of private insurance existing alongside the kind of insurance that the government wanted to bring about. In any event, you don't need to do the math anymore. All you need to do is listen to a 2007 interview with Obama that recently resurfaced. In this chilling discussion, he explains how he is in favor of the single-payer system and that other ideas would only be a step toward making that happen. But first, we want to play you something more recent. Here is Obama assuring us that he does not want a single-payer system. The date for this recording is 6/15/09, very recent.
The public option is not your enemy, it is your friend, I believe. Let me also address a illegitimate concern that's being put forward by those who are claiming that a public option is somehow a Trojan horse for a single-payer system.
Okay, that sounds great. The problem is a couple of years ago, on the date 3/24/07, here is Obama saying something quite different.
But I don't think we're going to be able to eliminate employer coverage immediately. There's going to be potentially some transition process. I can envision a decade out or 15 years out or 20 years out.
So now you have it in his own words. Will this latest radio wave of revelation make a difference to Obama supporters? I doubt it. He doubts it too. That's why he feels free to serve us extra helpings of poppycock pie. For example, look at the way he talks about the economy. Here's President Obama when the stock market is doing poorly. The stock market is not an accurate indicator of how our economy is doing. Besides, the state of the economy is not my fault. Don't forget, I inherited this mess from George W. Bush. And now here's President Obama when the stock market is doing well. See? Our stimulus package is working. Okay, fine, fine. So let's put him on record now. He said last week that the economy is doing well. For argument's sake, I'll just assume he's right. What happens a month from now when the economy travels south, as it undoubtedly will? Is he going to play the George Bush card again? Think about it. The moment Obama claims credit for the state of the economy, he is admitting that he is now responsible for the economy. If things get bad again, how exactly will he be able to leapfrog back to Bush? It's a tactic Obama will need to retire. People just won't buy it anymore. Then again, people did vote for the man in the first place, didn't they? Never mind. I take it back. As long as Obama continues to blame Bush, his groupies will follow suit. As long as Obama continues to do anything, his groupies will follow suit.
and the people bowed and prayed to the neon god they made. And the sign flashed out its warning in the words that it was forming. And the sign said the words of the prophets are written on the subway walls, the tenement halls, whispered the sounds of silence.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own websites simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
Call Bob now at 888-344-1170. That's toll free, 888-344-1170. Bob may have strong opinions, but he also likes to hear what you have to say.
The sound. Even more beautiful.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. If you'd like to weigh in on any of these things, give us a call at 1-888-344-1170. We also take email questions, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. Got a lot of response to my little anecdote about jury duty. Regarding that, Laura from Anaheim writes, funny. Well, thank you, Laura. I try to be funny. It kind of gets me through life. We could use a sense of humor these days. Joe, writing all the way from Worcester, Massachusetts, says, the same thing happened to me the last and first time I was called. But I brought my notebook PC with my inbox, downloaded to work offline, seminary textbook, and cell phone turned off. I took over an entire table and set up my portable office. It was the most productive day of the year. Please call me again. But I didn't get an omelet. Well, I didn't get that omelet for free, Joe. I paid for it. Mike in Champaign, Illinois writes, hey, when I did jury duty in LA, I had to sit around in the pool for 2 weeks. I had a chance to be on the Richard Ramirez jury, but you had to be available for 6 months, and I was moving in a week. I answered all their questions, and of course, they saved the 6 month one for last. I got a whopping $10 per day for sitting around the courthouse and reading. Blessings, Mike. And Pat from Northern California reads, I had the same exact experience up here in Northern California. It made me smile because I could relate. The only difference, I brought my laptop and I got more work done than I possibly could have in my office. Are y'all sensing a theme here? I'm sensing a theme. I'm pretty good about sensing things. Okay, guys, I get the message. I will never again be caught dead doing jury duty if I don't bring my laptop with me. It certainly would have made the day more productive. From Evie, and this is regarding my comments about Obama that I made last week about him transferring Gitmo prisoners to U.S. prisons where we have such a high concentration of converts to Islam. I said that our president was not the sharpest pencil in the pack for doing that. Evie says, don't you think that is his game plan to get them to convert? I do not trust him at all. Very evil person. Evie, I don't know if he's an evil person. I can't see into his heart. I know he is surrounded by evil people based on their deeds and based on some of the things they've said. And I know Obama has made many misstatements and has been caught lying many times. Whether he's evil or surrounded by evil people, though, at the end of the day will not make a whole lot of difference because evil is going to be the result of his policies. Mark my word. This is from Robin in San Diego. Regarding the dope I gave you last week about Obama's Muslim Homeland Security advisors who are connected to organizations with terrorist ties. She says, hi, Bob. Very concerning info. Thanks for keeping us informed. Take care, Robin. Henry, on the same subject, says, dear Pastor Bob. Folks, you don't have to call me Pastor Bob. Just Bob. Am I a pastor? Yes, but please call me Bob. Anyway, he says, dear Pastor Bob, because he didn't hear me tell him that he didn't have to. He says, it's hard to believe that we are putting the bad guys on our payroll. How do we get these guys out of homeland insecurity? Oh, I like that. Homeland insecurity. That's a good play on words, Henry. Henry continues, does our congressman read your blog? I don't know if congressmen read this blog. I know that on my website, I can see where in the United States people are reading it. And there's an awfully high concentration of readership on my website from Washington, D.C. I got to admit, I've had a little bit of pause from that. It could be conservative people who enjoy the blog, or it could be somebody adding me to Obama's naughty and nice list even before Christmas time. I hope it's the former, but either way, am I going to shut up? Not likely. Anyway, Henry continues. He says, I really am beginning to hate the way things are changing in our country, especially in Washington. You'd think they are trying to wreck us on purpose. We need Israel to stay strong in the Middle East and not to be weakened by Muslim jihadists from the U.S. Blessings to you, Bob. Well, thank you. Thank you, Henry. This next one is from Joel. Joel says, hi, Bob. I just got done reading the truth about Israel and Palestine and am delighted to have a correct account from a trusted source. Well, this trusted source he's talking to you about, you can read off of my website, which connects to my blog, bobsiegel.net. That's bobsiegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net. Right on the front page, you can either connect to an audio version, which is an older radio show, where I do a show called The History of Israel and Palestine, or it'll take you to a little mini electronic book, little 12-chapter piece called The Truth About Israel and Palestine that you can read off of my town hall blog. And people, this is so important. I know some of you have heard me talk about Israel and Palestine until you're tired of it, and I understand. But please, you need to understand there is nothing, and I mean nothing in history, that I have heard more lying, more downright lying about than the situation in the Middle East. What they're teaching in college campuses is simply not true. What you're hearing in the media is simply not true. And when I tell you, you need to know about these things that are true or not true, I'm not into conspiracy theories. I hate conspiracy theories. And you can always tell when you're hearing from a conspiracy theorist or not, because the person that's not into conspiracy theories will document his sources. The truth about Israel, you could go back and read in the New York Times, but it would be the New York Times back in the 40s when they were printing the truth. You can read the original documents of the United Nations before they became a corrupt organization. A conspiracy theorist will say, well, we don't have sources, because if we had sources, it wouldn't be a very good conspiracy, would it? See the difference? This is not a conspiracy theory. This is something you can check out at any time. Start with my articles. They are footnoted. They are documented. Anyway, Joel continues, and let me say, Joel, thank you for taking the time to read that entire 12-part series. A lot of people would not take the time to read that. He says, after I got done reading it, I had a few questions I thought I could clear up by searching the internet. Ha! The World Wide Web of Lies. Anyhow, when you have an opportunity to respond, can you tell me the real reason Muhammad targeted the Jews, the slang term they were given? One source I found online sounded believable in saying the Jews simply did not receive his teachings. Also, forgive my ignorance. If this is too much, you can maybe point me in the direction of some reading material. What's up with the five nations and then I think nine nations all joining up against Israel? Did Islam really dupe that many people? As I'm thinking about it, maybe it did and got into the powerful hands of the world's leaders. I suppose that was Bush's idea to try and appease the Muslim Arabs by seeking to convince Israel to take the deal, the roadmap for peace, prolonging the inevitable. What's that going to do? Wow, very good piece, Bob. Very thought-provoking, to say the least. This is a subject I have been curious about for quite some time, and especially after the hit so close to home, 9/11. Thank you for your time and for applying yourself for you and others. Well, thank you very much for the encouraging words, Joe. Let me respond to some of the things you said. First of all, Joe, you have it absolutely right. Essentially, Muhammad objected to Jews who would not embrace Islam. One of the questions that comes up a lot about the Quran is these verses about the jihad are right alongside other verses that talk about peace. That's because Muhammad originally tried to spread his message peacefully. When that did not work, by an amazing, incredible coincidence, he got new revelations from God telling him to spread it violently. As for the surrounding Arab nations, their problem with Israel is quite simple. Israel is not a Muslim country. It has nothing to do with any illegal occupation, as evidenced by the fact that originally they said Israel had no right to exist, period. The Palestinians were offered a state of their own. They turned it down. I'm glad the piece was helpful for you, Joel. Feel free to send me questions at any time. And we'll go through more of your email questions and take your phone calls when we return to the Bob Siegel Show. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785, that's 447-8785, for W&S Electric Incorporated, license number 480-539, W&S Electric.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. I'm taking your email comments and questions, questions at bobsiegel, SIEGEL.net. Since this next one's a little bit on the personal side, I'm going to withhold the name of this mother who sent in. She says, "Hello, Bob. I am curious about this verse, Proverbs 19:18. It directs a parent to discipline his or her son and says, and do not desire his death, quote unquote. Can you give me more insight into the second sentence? Is a little unnerving to me. Thanks." Very good question. Undisciplined children grow up not taking responsibility for their own actions. We see that all the time today, and it wasn't much different in ancient times because people have always been people. When that happens, it will estrange a person from a God who will ask obedience and call them to a sense of ethics, even if they did grow up without taking responsibility for their actions. In the Old Testament, being out of God's graces brought the possibility of death nearer. And I hope that clarifies a little bit. This next letter is from Cynthia in San Diego. She says, "Bob, I want you to know that I read your blogs all the time and pass them on to friends and family. Yours are probably the best I've read, and I really think you have found your niche. Keep up the great work." Thank you very much for the encouragement, Cynthia. The next is from Nils in Lemon Grove. Nils is responding to a piece I did by blog and on the radio 2 weeks ago where I talked about a time when I met some Hare Krishnas out at UCSD, and they were claiming that the Bible was a vegetarian book. I pointed out to them that not only did the Bible allow us to eat meat, many of God's customs and holidays commanded us to eat meat, and they responded by saying, "That's your interpretation." That spiraled into a discussion over the air about how we interpret the Bible. Do we interpret it objectively, or do we just go with warm fuzzy? So Nils in Lemon Grove is responding to this. He says, "I agree with what you say, with some reservations about God's part in the matter. In my opinion, the Bible was inspired by God and used in the same way Jesus used parables. It was his intention to hide the truth at this time, like Paul said, using a dark mirror as an example. Eventually, however, Paul said there will come a time when we will know accurately and be known accurately, so it is not surprising that many people are clearly doing God's will or operating in accord with his plan when they misunderstand or misinterpret his word. Jesus thanked God that the truth of his day was hidden from the wise and prudent and hast revealed them unto babes. However, I also know that what I am suggesting are forbidden words and dare not uttered to the flock for fear of stumbling them. For that reason, I don't propose this interpretation as truth, but as opinion only, signed Nils. And then he quotes the verse Matthew 11:25. At that time, Jesus answered and said, I thank thee, O Father, Lord in heaven and earth, because thou hast hid these things from the wise and prudent and has revealed them unto babes. Well, I guess he had kind of alluded to that passage earlier anyway. Well, interesting point, Nils. I'm of the opinion that the Bible is clear. I'm of the opinion that a Buddhist, a Christian, and an atheist could all read the Bible and agree as to what it says. They may disagree as to whether they like it. They may disagree as to whether they believe it. They may disagree as to whether or not they're going to obey it, but they should be able to agree as to what it says. Does the Bible need to be interpreted in the sense that it's a collection of ancient manuscripts, 2,000 years old for the New Testament, about 4,000 years old for the Old Testament? Certainly. We need interpretation such as literary criticism, studying the culture, the language, the historical background. But that's objective interpretation. That's not the same as saying, oh, well, I've prayed about it, and what God tells me it means and what God tells you it means could be different things. And if I could accept your interpretation as beautiful and you could accept my interpretation as beautiful, what a beautiful world this would be. And then we all start crying and joining hands and singing Kumbaya. It's not like that. Now, would a parable be an exception to what I'm saying? It is true that Jesus told parables. Let me make this as basic as I can. A parable was a form of communication in ancient Israel to teach the responsive disciple. Sometimes in the Bible, we do see a comparison. We see Eastern thought, the kind of teaching that Jesus primarily gave, and we see linear Western thought that Paul gave in books like Romans and the other epistles. Now, Paul's kind of teaching is a little more familiar to us. Jesus taught more with parables and with riddles, and he'd say things that would kind of scrump up people's brains, and it forced them to think. He'd go, the last will be first. The first will be last. If you find your life, you lose it. If you lose your life, you find it. And it left them scratching their heads and wondering what it was all about. And the idea behind that kind of teaching that people sometimes call the yin and the yang is that a person will receive and accept and remember better what he had to figure out for himself. So it's true that Jesus wanted his disciples to seek the meanings of his parables. How do we know what the parables meant? Well, it's quite simple, actually. If you read in the Gospels, usually 9 out of 10 times, Jesus tells a parable, and then you just keep on reading in the same chapter. His disciples come to him and they say, tell us what that meant. And then he explains it. Another thing about parables is parables were meant to convey one basic truth, and that one basic truth had something to do with God and his kingdom. So this eliminates 90% of the bird brain interpretations. Well, I hope that helps a little bit to show why I think even parables can be looked at objectively. If we understand the culture and study what the intention was behind parables, realize they only had one basic meaning and that the meaning had something to do with God and his kingdom, it's not too hard to figure out. Okay, I have something else that was sent to me over the internet, and this is interesting. Now, I always believe in giving credit where credit is due. Usually when I do a bit on this program, it's all my own material, whether it's Smiley Miley or Disclaimer Dan or whatever. This is something that came to me over the internet, was forwarded to me by my girlfriend because she thought I'd find it interesting to read on the show. So I can't take credit for it, but neither can I give credit because the author left his name off. But it's called Joe Legal versus Joe Illegal. He says, here is an example of why hiring illegal aliens is not economically productive. You have two families, Joe Legal and Joe Illegal. Both families have two parents, two children, and live in California. Well, of course they live in California. Now, where else would they live? Anyway, it continues. Joe Legal works in construction, has a social security number, and makes $25 per hour with payroll taxes deducted. Joe Illegal also works in construction, has no social security number, and gets paid $15 cash under the table. Joe Legal, $25 per hour times 40 hours equals 1,000 hours per week, or 52,000 hours per year, $52,000 per year, I meant to say. Now take 30% away for state and federal tax. Joe Legal now has $31,231. Joe Illegal adds up this way, $15 per hour times 40 hours, $600 per week, or $31,200 per year. Joe Illegal pays no taxes. Joe Illegal now has $31,200. Joe Legal pays medical and dental insurance with limited coverage, $1,000 per month, $12,000 per year. Joe Legal now has $19,231. Joe Illegal has full medical and dental coverage through the state and local clinics at a cost of $0 per year. Joe Illegal still has $31,200. Joe Legal makes too much money and therefore is not eligible for food stamps or welfare. So Joe Legal pays for food, $1,000 per month, $12,000 per year. Joe Legal now has $7,231. Joe Illegal has no documented income and is eligible for food stamps and welfare. Joe Illegal still has $31,200. Joe Legal pays rent of $1,000 per month, $12,000 per year. Joe Legal is now in the hole, minus $4,769. Joe Illegal receives a $500 per month federal rent subsidy. Joe Illegal pays rent, but now only has to pay $500 a month rent because most of it's being taken care of by the government, or $6,000 per year. Joe Illegal still has $25,200. Joe Legal now works overtime on Saturdays or gets a part-time job after work. Joe Illegal has nights and weekends off to enjoy with his family. Joe Legal's and Joe Illegal's children both attend the same school. Joe Legal pays for his children's lunches, while Joe Illegal's children get a government-sponsored lunch. Joe Illegal's children have an after-school ESL program. Joe Legal's children go home. Joe Legal and Joe Illegal both enjoy the same police and fire services, but Joe Legal paid for them, and Joe Legal did not pay. Are you getting the message? Okay. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home? Or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
I'd like to remind all of my listeners that The Bob Siegel Show has a sister program on our sister station, KPRZ 1210 on the dial. Every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30, you can hear City Voice. On this provocative program, my good friend George Runyon interviews a different local Christian ministry every week. You can listen to the show while driving to church, and don't be surprised, you may find it so interesting that you'll stay in the parking lot continuing to listen and skipping those Sunday school donuts. That's City Voice with George Runyon, every Sunday morning from 9 o'clock to 9:30 on our sister station, KPRZ 1210. But right now, you're listening to KCBQ 1170. Welcome back to our program. During our break, our tech operator Cameron said, "Boy, that sure was depressing." What I was reading about Joe Legal and Joe Illegal. Yeah, it's not just an internet bid. It's something that makes you want to go bang your head against a tree. Now, look, I need to say something. A couple of weeks ago, I do this periodically. I did what I called the politically correct lexicon. And when we hear words like tolerance and we hear words like compassion, I know that a lot of the people that follow after those words and respond to them emotionally are doing so sincerely. So I mean nobody any disrespect, but you have to understand what the people who drive those movements are trying to do. There is a movement regarding the whole illegal situation, which is of the belief that California, New Mexico, Arizona, and Texas should be given back to Mexico. Now, if you believe that and you want to follow that movement, fine. But if you don't really believe that, then don't be somebody's fool, because this is just for the suckers, words like tolerance. This is nuts. Could you have imagined somebody back in the 1960s or 1950s saying the day would come when you'd be called unloving and tolerant just because you're of the opinion that somebody who comes to America should do this legally? Other countries have borders, but America's not allowed to have borders. Other countries have their own language, but America's not allowed to have its own language. Other countries ask people to assimilate, but America's not allowed to do that. What America is allowed to do is pay for and liberate people all over the world, liberate countries from their enemies attacking, take care of them like some great big nanny state all over the entire world. That's what America's allowed to do. The people that spit in America's eye and criticize America the most would be nowhere if it wasn't for America. And frankly, I think we all ought to be getting just sick and tired of it. Okay, here's another question. Bob, if God intended for the Israelites to someday live under a new covenant, one in which the law was no longer in operation, why didn't he say as much when he gave them the law? Very good question. Well, part of the law is the book of Deuteronomy. It is the first five books of the Bible that we call the law. These are the five books that God gave Moses up on Mount Sinai. And at the end of Deuteronomy, Moses, in his farewell address, tells the congregation of Israel, and I guess Joshua wrote it down. Obviously, Moses didn't write down the end of Deuteronomy, not the part that said that he died and got buried. Joshua evidently wrote that part down because he wrote the next book, Joshua. And Moses, in his farewell address, tells the congregation of Israel that God will continue to communicate with them through prophets. That's found in Deuteronomy chapter 18. Please remember that it's an extremely important passage. For in this passage, Moses is elevating the prophets to the law. That's very important. He's saying when you read the rest of the Bible, it is as important as the first five books of the Bible. If you talk to an Orthodox Jew today, they'll say only the first five books are important. Even in Jesus' day, there was a group of people known as the Sadducees, and they were of the belief that only the first five books were inspired. Today, an Orthodox Jew would go, well, we're not exactly saying that the rest of the Bible isn't as inspired, but it's not quite as holy as the Torah. Well, according to Moses, the prophets, and prophets didn't just mean, didn't just mean Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel, it included them. But it included the historical books like 1 Samuel and 2 Samuel and Kings and Chronicles. There was a third section of the scripture called the writing. But anyway, Moses is saying that God is going to send prophets to speak to the people, and they need to listen to these prophets. We can now flash forward to the time of Jeremiah, a prophet with all the authority that Moses ascribed to future prophets. Jeremiah speaks of a time when God will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, in which their rapport with the law will be different. God will write the law on their hearts. That's Jeremiah chapter 31. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. Why do I know what some of you are thinking? Because I'm a prophet? No, but because I've had this conversation 50 billion times. Some of you are thinking, well, Bob, many don't care for the idea of a prophet. They want God alone to come down and make himself known. Why can't God, if he really wants to make himself known, if we're really not going to get saved apart from having a relationship with him, then wouldn't it be most fair and most prudent for God to just come down from his throne and come down to earth and speak audibly and let everybody hear him? People, that is just exactly what God did. He came down to Mount Sinai with trumpets, with fire, and with special effects that would make George Lucas and Steven Spielberg pop their jaws. The first 10 of his commandments were uttered audibly, right out of the sky. God did just exactly what people always ask him to do. And how did the Israelites respond? They freaked out. They couldn't handle it. They took Moses aside. They said, look, why don't you go up to the mountain? Let God give you the rest of his law, and then you can come back down and tell us what he said. So Moses did this. He did what they requested. He was up on the mountain with God for 40 days and 40 nights. When he returned, the people mumbled and grumbled, well, now how do we know that God really spoke to Moses? Why should we listen to him? He could be making this all up. At the end of his life, while giving his farewell State of the Union address, while reminding the Israelites that God would now be sending additional prophets, Moses also reminded them, this was your idea. God offered to speak directly, and you chose another way. You chose prophets, so you'd just better listen to him. Isn't it interesting? When God sent his prophets, people said, well, how do we know these people are really from God? One of the prophets was a man named Jesus. Irony of ironies, Jesus was God. He was God incarnate. He was God in the form of a man. And people said, well, I don't have a problem with God, but I have a real problem with this Jesus guy who claims he knows so much about God. Now here it is 2,000 years later, and you know what I get all the time? I get this all the time. Oh, I don't have a problem with Jesus. Jesus was cool, but I have a real problem with these Christians conveying the message of Jesus. Isn't it interesting? Nobody ever has a problem with the source. They only have a problem with the messenger. Well, we're on a roll, so I'm going to do another Bible question, but I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it when we return. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show. Projects don't just happen. Good projects are a result of a team of dedicated professionals, owners, architects, and contractors striving toward a common goal. Make OMP a part of your team. If you're looking for professional, knowledgeable experience for your construction project team, Oso Miller Pacific should be your first call. For over 20 years, Mark Miller has been providing project management and constructive services throughout San Diego and Southern California. As president of Oso Miller Pacific, Mark continues this tradition of providing the most professional services in the industry to the healthcare, commercial, and government construction markets. Oso Miller Pacific provides a full range of pre-construction services, including definition of needs, design team selection, concept budget generation, and construction services. This full range of services is what sets Oso Miller Pacific apart from its competition. Visit their website at osomillerpacific.com. That's www.osomillerpacific.com or call the offices at 619-449-0633. Again, the number is 619-449-0633. Good projects don't just happen. Call Oso Miller Pacific. This is Bob Siegel inviting you to tune in for the Rick Amato Show four nights a week here on 1170 KCBQ. Rick stays on top of the issues, local and national. He also does some of the most stimulating interviews you've ever heard. That's the Rick Amato Show, Monday through Thursdays from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. here on Intelligent Talk 1170 KCBQ. You can also find Rick on AmatoTalk.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. Among other things on the Bob Siegel Show, we take a lot of time to answer people's Bible questions, and one answer you're never going to hear from me, and this is distinctly different from what you might get in some churches, we're never going to hear, well, you have to accept it on faith. I'm not saying that there aren't some things about God that we do have to accept on faith. How does God exist? Obviously, there are some things. But most of the time, I find that skeptics are asking good questions, and we respect skeptics on this program, In fact, I like to describe our show as a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters. Doubt is not a four-letter word. You can count those letters yourself and see how many letters it really has. So you can call in with your questions or send us the questions. I get many of them by email, questions@bobsiegel.net. That's questions@bobsiegel.net. The next one says, Bob, in John 8:58, Jesus identifies himself as God by using the very name of God, I am. The Jewish leaders seemed to understand just exactly what he was saying. After all, they picked up stones to execute him, and rightly so, for a Jew to claim to be God was the highest form of blasphemy, unless by chance he was telling the truth. But the Jews had no way to discern whether or not Jesus was telling the truth. Why did God not authenticate the deity of Jesus right then and there? Why hold the Jews responsible for sincere ignorance? First of all, I'm glad that, and I've had some interesting dialogues with this fellow who briefly converted to Judaism and examined it. I'm glad you noticed this. A lot of people don't get this. A lot of times people say, well, Jesus never claimed to be God. He did. This is in John 8:58. He said, before Abraham was, I am. Now, what does that mean? If you go back to the book of Exodus, when God met Moses at the burning bush, Exodus chapter 3, God says to Moses, go into Egypt and tell the Pharaoh to let my people go. And Moses says, well, the Pharaoh's going to ask me what your name is. And God said, I am that I am. Tell the Pharaoh, I am has sent you. That was God's name, a name too holy to be pronounced. In fact, in the synagogues, when they would read the Torah and they would read the rest of the Bible, whenever they got to the name for God, instead of saying the name, they would say another Hebrew word, Adonai. They would say the Lord, because they considered his name too holy to be pronounced. And then the very first Greek translation out of the Hebrew, they put in the word kurios, which is the Greek word for God, instead. And that is a tradition that has remained in our English translations. When you are reading the Old Testament, every time you get to the word the Lord in capital letters, that really means I am, the name of God. So Jesus is absolutely calling himself by God. And as the fellow who wrote this question so prudently points out, the Jews understood exactly what he meant, because they were going to pick up stones to stone him. Here a man was claiming to be God. Now, if he was telling the truth, that's not a problem, but they didn't expect that. So he's asking the question, well, if Jesus was really God, why didn't they hear something right out of the sky? Okay. How God deals with sincere ignorance is a topic for another time. I do believe he takes ignorance into account for what it's worth. But as for the primary question being asked right now, the answer is quite simple. God did establish Jesus. No, he did not speak to the Jews right out of the sky at that particular moment, but he had used exactly that very theophany before. When Jesus was baptized, God spoke out of the sky saying, "This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." Now today, that might not seem to mean a whole lot. To you, it might mean little more than God saying, well, Jesus, like all of us, is one of his children. But you need to understand, in the days of ancient Israel, the term Son of God meant something quite different. The title was a very specific claim to deity. Throughout the remainder of Jesus' ministry, he performed miracles, signs, and wonders. He healed the blind, the deaf, the mute. He also multiplied fish, cast out demons, walked on water, calmed the storm. During his crucifixion, the sky turned dark. Many Old Testament saints resurrected, making numerous appearances to the Jews. The priests of the temple witnessed the curtain to the Holy of Holies being supernaturally rent in two. This indicated that the old covenant was over and that access to God was now granted. No longer would people need the high priest alone to seek atonement for their sins. On the following Sunday morning, there was an earthquake and the visitation of an angel to Roman guards who reported the incident. This same angel rolled the stone away from the sepulcher where Jesus' body had been buried. Finally, the resurrected Jesus himself appeared to 500 people. I would say that God did a fairly good job of authenticating Jesus. Now, I'm going to act like a mind reader again. And guess what? Some of you smart skeptics out there are thinking, but Bob, all these incidents you just described are in the Bible. What if we do not accept the Bible? Well, the fellow who wrote me the question was accepting the Bible for the sake of the conversation. So people do this all the time. They alter the premise of the question. A moment ago, we were accepting the Bible when we pointed out that Jesus claimed to be God in front of the Jews without immediate authentication. And the question was just, how come I read here in the Bible that there was no immediate authentication? You see, if you are going to pose a question from within the parameters of the Bible, then you must answer within the same boundaries. If your objection was according to the Bible, it does not look as if God proved the claims of Jesus Christ. My answer simply follows the rules of your own question. Actually, according to the Bible, God did demonstrate the credentials of Jesus. Now, having said that, there are other ancient documents which authenticate these same events. Josephus, Tacitus, Acts of Pilate, Talmud. But for today, we're looking at the biblical narrative. I will see you next week. You're always welcome.
Views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton, helping infertile families have children. Tom Pinkerton would like to invite you to help Bob expand his radio program by donations or sponsorship. For more information about Bob's ministry, go to www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's articles and get information about Bob's books. That's Bob Siegel, S-I-E-G-E-L.net.